Mr. William Holbrooke, Reel 9. You were telling us about the period in front of the German trenches above the Aisne. Did you attempt under the shrapnel fire to improve your own trenches to make them deeper and to get more cover?
Yeah, we've got more. We had quite a bit of cover there, though, because of the shrapnel bursting above. The trenches weren't far away. I don't suppose they were more than that, 100 yards. And, of course, the shrapnel fire went. But I always remember there, things stand out in your memory a bit, you know. I remember seeing a fellow who hit the shell near me. He had half his face cut away, you see. And he lost, I think he lost an eye, but that part of his jaw and it was all cut away. Bad he was, and then we got him down to this. And shortly after, well, some years or so after, I was talking to a fellow, and I said, don't know so-and-so, do you know? Know him well, he said. I said, did he survive that? He said, oh, yes, he said, if you saw him now, you wouldn't believe. He said, they made a new face of him. And he said, he's almost like, you can hardly see any of it, it's part of the skull. He said, after this plastic surgery, they built up his face and almost like a new man of him. And, anyway, another thing I think of there is that the other side of the Aisne, well, this side, a good way back, they sent a message saying that the Germans were, because they used aircraft a bit then, and they said the Germans were massing for an attack. The message came up. Near the officer when they came up, he said, got all these. And he said, could you confirm this? And our colonel, there's this one here, I remember him, but he said, yes, he said, it was a Sunday morning. He said, yes, you're quite right. They were sending me for church parade. I don't know what they're doing. That's what he sent back. Oh, this calm is going to like, send the church parade. Another one, I think there was a fellow sergeant named Baker. During one of the attacks on the Aisne, he fell back and cleared off and abandoned the trench, you see, which was very bad, and he got arrested for it. And when we came out of the Aisne, because I used to go back to where the colonel was and attend to him a bit if I could, you see. If I could get near him, I would, and he never worried. He'd help me and all that sort of thing. He was so good to me. And if I came out the line or from anywhere near from where the company headquarters were, I'd go back to him, you see, and perhaps if he wanted a bath or anything, things like that.
But you weren't acting as his orderly?
Oh, no, not there wasn't.
Whose orderly were you?
The company orderly. The orderly of the company.
So you'd help the colonel just informally?
Yes, yes. When he came out the line, I went back to him. Went back and did normal things for him. Because he's just a good doctor. So I remember this Sergeant Baker, and I was with the colonel, and I was just out, and when he brought in, about 2 days, I brought him to be charged, you see, for desertion. And because I used to listen to news, I used to listen to them. I heard him say to the sergeant, he said, Sergeant Baker, he said, I shan't punish you for what you did. He said, all I think, he said, you forgot for once that these are all fusilier, and dismissed him. That's what he said. He could have been shot. He said, I think for just the one occasion he forgot this was a Royal Fusilier. I never forget, I think it was wonderful really. It shows what a man he was. Another time he was up there and I tried to get where was he? Just outside the Aisne, and we'd fallen back, so I was with him then. I was going with him while I could, you know. If I was in orderly with the company and the colonel got fat and anyway, now I'd go with him. They didn't take notes on me, they'd let me go. And I said to him, he said, not yet. I said, would you like something to drink? So he said, can you get something? I said, I'll try. So he's on the Aisne still, so I put back some matches or things like that, and bits of things like old bits of canvas and petrol shaped stuff, so I make a bit of a fire, you know. I was carrying the insects. So I made a bit of a fire from undercover. I made a cup of tea, and I had a Nestle's milk tin, you know. What I used to do was to take the paper off, open the lid three parts round, bend it back, turn the sides, and bend it, make an handle, you see. So it was a lovely and clean, because they used to be clean tins, those Nestle's milk. And I got the can, I bought it, obviously, it was lovely. I said, would you like something to eat? So he said, have you got something else? I said, I've got some McConaughey stew. That was they give us tins of meat and vegetables called McConaughey's. We used to have that. Well, so I got one of those three visible, which said, please. He said, so I went back and I hopped this up, and because I could only give it to him in the mug, he'd take the tea out of it, so, you know, I couldn't wash up anything. So I had to dive the tin into the stew, you know, and give him all greasy such thing. Took it back. I did like to give him. I could see him sitting in there. Oh, he said, that was lovely. He ate this mutton stew on top. This old stew on top of the tea, you know, greasy old tin. I thought, what to do that? A man of his in his position, never complained, nothing. Wonderful man, I think he was. Well, then we.
What was the morale of the unit like in front, you know, while you're in these?
Very smart, very good, very good.
Even with the casualties.
Yes, very, very good.
So this Baker was an isolated incident.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. He lost his whereabouts, I suppose. He was a nice fellow, like Baker's on Baker. But I don't know what happened to him in the end. But yeah, well, I'll never forget what he said. He said, forgot once he was a fusilier. He said.
So there was the heavy casualties from shrapnel weren't affecting the mood.
We didn't have very heavy casualties there. Marvellous, really. It was a good cover, but yeah, quite a lot of few. And when we came out, when we was relieved, we went back from French to relieved, just like French. Really, what happened, see, the Germans had attacked Antwerp on the other side, and we sent a naval division, didn't we, because I'll be about to after. We sent a naval division there to try and stop them bombing, but they didn't bomb them, so the Germans went on the Calais coast, which went toward the British coast, the English Channel. So what they did, they brought all the troops around, all the British troops were taken to the Aisne, some division, a couple of divisions, army corps, were brought round by night marches to Ypres. And I remember the first day out, General Hamilton, he was there.
That's a fair march. Was it exhausting? It's a long way.
Yes, it was. We marched all night marches. We marched so that they shouldn't think the British troops were being moved, if they didn't want the Germans and the British troops. So there's no aircraft. So we've done everything at night. We marched from the Aisne to Abbeville on the French coast, about four nights. And then we marched from the Abbeville up to Ypres to block them. They was coming through the men anyway. So. And that was their second time at Ypres, and in about 3 months. So, but I remember the...
Did you have any clashes with the Germans on the way up to Ypres?
No. Saw nothing, whatever. We didn't see a German from the time we left the Aisne to the time we got to Ypres. Oh, yes, we did, sorry. Oh, yes, we did. We came from the Aisne and got as far as Abbeville by night marches. Then we got to go up to Ypres. But on the way up to Ypres, we went to Neuve-Chapelle, that way up. We went around about way, doing up the same main road, going to Neuve-Chapelle, Levante, and some other place, maybe, which the Germans are holding, villages in front of the Ypres, on that part of the line, Neuve-Chapelle.
What exactly happened then when you clashed with the Germans? What happened when you clashed with the Germans at Neuve-Chapelle?
Well, when we got Neuve-Chapelle, the Germans fell back. Then we advanced on to a place called Levante and Neuve-Eglise. And there they held on, because I remember seeing some troops attacking before, because there was a lot of dead line on the main road. I remember thinking, we've got to go through that lot. Anyway.
Where these clashes had been, and where the Germans... Was each side now establishing the trench lines, or beginning
open.
Trench lines?
In the open, and just... Oh, cover, little cover, no trenches, not deep trenches. Oh, and just cover. There was no deep trenches till we got to... doing a Battle of Ypres, really.
Okay, well, we'll come to that then, and fair enough.
Levante, we attacked there, but the thing I remember the most was that I was lying on the side of the road... undercover there, fine, and the Germans put a shell. I was lying right beside the Levante church, and the Germans put a shell, and he fell into the church. Across the road where I am now, and set it on fire. And as I was lying there, about half an hour, all the slates came off the steeple in hundreds, clashing the ground in hundreds. And then suddenly the steeple turned over, stuck in the ground. The point of the steeple getting the other part up. So it felt like that, and people told me it was there for years like it. Yeah, these people that were completely over and stuck in the ground. Anyway, we drove them back then to a place called Bayeul. That's about
I believe there Sir John French spoke to you.
What, yes, at my own. Yes.
What can you remember about that?
Oh, no, that was what he said. We got together and he said, now, he said, you'll read it for bail for a few days, about 3 or 4 days, getting organised for Ypres, you see. And he said, got this, now, he said, you're going to take part, he said, in the most important battle, he said, of the war. He said, and in a few days, he said, you'll be following up a beaten enemy. And that's it, that was his words. I thought about it since then. Beaten enemy. So we had to go from Bayeux to Ypres then, you see.
What did you think of French? How did he impress you as a commander? Or?
No. Well, like, the best general we had was Mr. Reen.
Well, why didn't... We'll come to him later, but why didn't French impress you?
Well, he seemed to be a woman. That's what he seemed to be. He didn't seem to be a smart soldier sort of man like some of the others were. You know, he's short and he's a cavalryman. And no, he didn't impress whatever. None of whatever.
What about Smith Durian? Was he your corps commander?
Smith Durian.
When did he command you? Smith Durian.
Smith Durian, no, well, Dreyfus Mons.
Yes, that's...
Yes.
What? That's second corps, isn't it?
Hmm?
Second corps.
Yes, yes.
What was it that impressed you about him?
Oh, he was a good... You could read it in him. He was a man built for a soldier. He treated the men like men, you know, and he praised them up. If there was any little praise to be given, he'd give it. Smith wouldn't, French wouldn't. And I remember Smith Doreen once said that sometime after we marched along the road one day, and he stood at the side of the road, and he should have a white horse. And he's by the side of the road as we marched by, and I heard him say, that's when we got a lot of new men out. During the war, you see, a lot of new men to come. I heard him say to some officer, so he said, he's a bloody good man, you say, but not the old stuff, you know, not the old stuff. I didn't say that. Anyway, we went up to Ypres from there, from Bayonne, and on the way up, I was an order then, got a job as an order again, up there for then. And on the way up, I was with another fellow, and going up to Ypres, and we passed through some village. I was with the troops, and we halted on the side of the road, and I sat down on the side of the road in the shop doorway for rest, you see. And a guard sergeant came along, coming back from the other way. So I said to him, he said, where are you going, mate? To me, so I said, we're going to a place called, I said, Ypres, or some name, Ypres, or something. I said, what's it like up there? I always remember his words. He said, man, he said, a dog can live in there. I thought, we're going to the right place then. He said, a dog couldn't live in it, he said. And he was quite right, too. But then we got up there to Ypres and...
When did you arrive at Ypres? Hmm? Can you remember roughly the date you arrived at Ypres?
The date? Hmm. Oh, about, yes. I'll say about the beginning of November, 1914. We've been all that way in that day once. We've been from Mons to... Retreat from Mons, Marne, Ain, back to Ypres again in 3 months.
Were people, how did people's fitness stand up to that? Was everybody managing all right, or what?
What do you mean, the troops?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. We had drafts come up, a few men and that, but, oh, yes. A lot of the old ones were still there. It wasn't until the Ypres that we got knocked about completely. And so when we got there, I was, got the job, we took over some trenches, not much trenches, well, we did take them over themselves in any bits of... strapped like ditches in the woods, and it was a jello veld place on the right of Ypres near the Menin Road, our position where we took over, and we got there about the 10th of November, I think, somewhere about that, and took over this position, and
do you know where this position was in front of Ypres? Do you know the nearest village or
jello veld was the Yeah, it was right close to Jellyville we were. And then we...
How deep... Did you have any trenches at all?
No. It was like more or less a continuation of ditches and connected up by trenches, but not deep, nothing deep in there that. I wanted to just cover from your head and shoulders. We never had any trenches. We got to some time away. And So I got my, I was in the trenches then, of course, in the recall trenches, and combat my arm was about 30 yards on my right, I should say. And then we, that night, we had a draft from England. We took a position there, and snow on the ground, visible with the weather. Wet snow, that's, you know, that sort of horrible stuff. And because we got nothing, had no food much, we needed perhaps a few odd biscuits and a bit of chocolate, thick chocolate, and a can of water. But we had, no butter or sugar or any of that, you know. You had no butter on anything, and no just sugar in tea. You just drank the tea like no milk or sugar, and when you could make it. And of course, your food was nothing but biscuits. I'll tell you, what can't do now. Mm. Oh, well, that was the same night. I was there, you know, we were close to the Menin Road. Or was it that night? Yes, yeah, some, I think, that was the following night. And close to Menin Road. And in this, I was going to do, well, okay, if I could do anything for him, so I would. I'd go and say, do you want to throw him there to him? If I couldn't. He was ever so good to me. He said, yes, he said, can you make us a cup of something to drink? He said, I've got some coffee tablets or sugar and milk trust tablets. He said, a couple of those. We didn't make a couple of cups for us. I said, well, I said, I don't know about water. I said, because he said, the water cart that they smashed on the Menin Road. I said, where did you get the water from? I said, the last 3 days. I said, it's absolutely empty now. I said, I'd have to get out the shell holes or snow. Oh, he said, that's all right. He said, so I scraped this snow and stuff in the canteen, maybe got enough water. A box of matches or something, and that, or my lighter, I've got my lighter, that's all right, and lit some pieces of paper and dry stuff, and that, and managed to get a little flame, and heated this water, because it didn't boil, it couldn't boil, heated the water, and stirred this coffee stuff in it, you know, and gave one of his Nestle tin meat, as I told his Nestle milk tins each, you see, and I said, oh, clean. And
Who was he with?
The Colonel, General Hamilton. He's in charge of the division up the thumb run. He got killed. And I remember Hamilton, come to mind, saying to Hamilton, they said, not much like the Café de Paris, is it? I said, what's your mind of the Café de Paris? He said, because I'd never been there, I didn't know what it was. But, I think, I haven't been with it afterwards. Well, I know, but I've been to the Café de Paris since, of course, but, you know, Café de Paris. Well, he got.
Generally, the food situation wasn't too good when you arrived at Ypres, somewhere around the 10th, 11th.
Oh, no.
Actually hungry when you...
Pardon?
Were you actually, short of enough, were you actually hungry for rations?
All the time. See what we could, you know. I pulled out these old mangold wurzels out the field and these meat, these sugar beet and eat them raw. And they're terrible things, they were. They've got a sugar beet, got a harsh, rasping sort of flavour in your mouth, and but I'd pull them out. They've gone out when I've seen a field of sugar beet. I've gone and pulled one out or a couple out and give them, we had one or two each and put one in their pack and eat it raw with all dirt and everything else on it. With no other thing to eat. And the only water you got was shallow water. You had no tea or anything of that. You had nothing like that up there. Never saw. I never saw a cup of tea or a mug of pot of tea candy. All the time was up with it. All that time, we got what we got ourselves, you know, from the snow and shallows and stuff like that. And anyway, he
now,
went
on the 11th, I believe you got a draft of 200 new troops. Could you tell me about their arrival and how they fitted in and what their quality was like and such like?
Oh yes, so they that was these two girls in the hospital. That was their brother, Honourable Maitland or something. You had an M. I know he was. Everything. I was a young chap, about 22. And he was in charge of about 200 new men coming out from England to reinforce us. As we weren't very strong. We were about 800 strong. That wasn't very strong for the position we held. And they sent this lot from England, all new men. But they'd never been in the line before. And they said, to put men into a line like it was terrible. I mean, they were a lot older than me. They were much older.
Were they reservists again?
Mm. Oh, no, but new men.
Completely new?
Yes. They
couldn't have had much training.
No, that's what I said. There weren't no training, no. And I think the sort of thing that I was young enough, and I had training, but see them come up there, and I thought, so I thought the officer told me the problem. That young officer I did, and they were shelling. When they got there, it was late at night they got there, it was the night of about the 11th of November, I think. Yes, 11th of November, or 10th of November. It was my birthday, I know, next day, 12th, as I remember that. And these people got, before they came, you know, we before they arrived up to where we were, we were lying on the parsley ground. We advanced a bit there. That's where I got my ear. I bared the deaf. I was advancing with the others, and the fellow next to me, instead of coming up straight, crawling up on me, level with me, he called up, and so his rifle was right against my ear. I didn't know this. Right against my ear, as it was, you know, this ear. And he pulled the trigger fired, and God, I couldn't hear only a tinkle for that for weeks and weeks and weeks, that ear. Anyway, the men come up, and of course, they never faced anything like that before, and they started clearing off. They all ran off, dispersed through these woods, you see. After time, they got them back, and the colonel of them had come up to him and saying to him, "Spank, there's the knife," he said. "Now," he said, "look, yeah," he said, "these shells make a great deal of noise, yet they do very little harm." He said, "I'll see you all in the morning." That's what he said to them, because there was no morning. Anyway, I never saw them all, the officer. And next morning, we were shelling and fighting. They always said, "They just attacked us, we attacked." They drove us back about 100 yards, I suppose, towards the Menin Road. And
What can you remember about the German attack? This would be on the 12th of November, on your birthday, would it? This attack was on your birthday, was it?
Yes. So or the day before.
So it was the 11th or the 12th, yes, the Germans attacked. Yes. What time did they attack? What was the pattern of the day?
Well, we started during the night. During the night, early hours of the morning. He wasn't light when they drove us. It was a Prussian Guard attack. The Prussian Guard in front of us, big, bloody dead fellows, and thousands of them. A small battalion of men. And they dug out of trenches anyway, killed a colonel.
So they actually got... This was one time when the rapid fire was not enough, and they actually broke through.
You couldn't see them in the half dark. You know, there's all... and not in the, amongst trees and bushes. You see, no clear field of fire at all. It's all bush... not the bushes, far like I remember. And
what could you see then, as they approached?
You hadn't seen them before. They got the fire quite near you. You heard the noise and all the fire. You're more or less firing at, and not know where you're firing at. You couldn't tell. You knew the firemen come from those with the woods and that sort of thing, but you know who they were. And we saw these fellows, these damn great Prussian Guard fellows. We drove them back in the end.
What happened when they actually came up to your line then? What did you...
We fell back.
Were you in the front line at this
time? Yes, we fell back. As we fell back, they advanced and fell back. To the end, we got them goggy and casual. They got so many cannons, they couldn't advance any further. So we took our trenches. But the real reason for this attack was that we were lying close to the... As I say, the position was there. And down here was the Menin Road, straight down the main road. And the French, of all people, had put in this road, to all that road, they had kind of a trench across the road, and to all the sides of the road and the road itself, were Zouave troops. French, North African troops, aren't they? They wear their baggy trousers, white baggy trousers. And of course, they're hopeless. As soon as they got heavy shelling, they cleared off and left. So the Germans came down that road and encircled us. See, there was nobody there to stop them. They cleared off, ran away, all this battalion of Zouaves. And we had hold that part of the road in our own position as well. Anyway, we went there, but when the morning came, I remember. The fellow come up with me.
So when the Germans actually got to you, you fell back. Is this when would you be suffering a lot of casualties as you fell back?
Yes. That's what I mean there. All thousands, hundreds off there.
How did the colonel?
He got killed.
How did that happen?
I was about 20 yards, 30 yards along the line, and a fellow named Cheney, Corporal Cheney. I've never seen him since. I think he must have got killed afterwards. He came along and said, "The colonel's been killed." "Been killed?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "No." I said, "Just on here?" So he said, "Yes." God, they fought the life out of me. I thought, "Oh dear, what's I doing there?" Because I looked upon him as a father of one of yours, you know. And he got me his pocket, he gave me his pocketbook, he taken it out of him. So I knew he was dead, so I didn't see him. And he gave me his revolver. And then that way he's driven back further. So he got his body in there in the end. He's got all of his body, and
did it upset you greatly? I mean, you know, because this was a real friend of yours, aren't we? No. Did it upset you a lot when the colonel?
Oh yes, I didn't know what to do myself for days. neither the men were left eye, they thought upon him. They couldn't. When he got killed, somebody obliterated the whole battalion. Absolutely dumbstruck. They couldn't understand it. They thought so much of him. And what pleased me sometime after was I was in the Tower Army for lunch and I heard two officers talking. And I heard them say, the finest battalion, they said, of our regiment, he said, was the 4th Battalion. He said, the kindest colonel we'll ever have, but we'll have is Colonel McMahon. And I thought, well, it pleased me to hear that. So now, I didn't say anything, I just walked on, but these two officers were talking. They did the officers will, I thought the world of him.
So it had a real effect on morale of the troops when
it did,
he was killed.
Yes, it did. It did. I thought they'd broken up. Honestly, they didn't. It just was over. An avalanche had come down and swamped the lot of them. No other officers they made them feel like that. They could lose the Major or Major Maddock and Major Jeremy Gwynn. They got killed or wounded. Didn't think anything of it. Anything happened to him, oh God, they thought it was impossible.
What about your other friends and people you'd train with? They'd all be presumably getting killed as well. Was that affecting your...
No, it affected me, of course. We got driven back, and then we regained some trenches. But they got back to so far they got to the dressing station. They killed Doctor Major McGregor. He's a Scotsman. He's an army doctor. Killed him down looking after the wounded. They killed him, and he died then. And then we were, I suppose, about 700 or 800 strong when we went there. Then we had this draft of 200 that made us 900 so strong. We had 32 officers. That was on the night of the 11th of November. By 8 o'clock next morning, we had no officers left and 34 men. That's all we had at 900. We lost him in that evening. The night.
Including all the new raw recruits that come up.
Yes. I never saw them all then. Never saw the officer either. What happened to him? We've never heard of. So even a year afterwards, your sister's there. Didn't know.
So what happened to you after you fell back?
When I fell back, I was on my own.
You lost touch with the rest of the unit. The battalion was utterly broken up by this.
It was broken up so much that nobody knew where one another was. And I was in these bushes, and the firing was still going on, and shrapnel fire. It started being heavy shells in those days, one or two. I thought to myself, well, I don't know, I'm not going to hunt down. This is about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon before I can move. And I thought, I'm going to see if I can find somebody else about there. So I wandered, crawled through the snow on these bushes and didn't see none of the owls. I don't know where they got to. Suddenly I saw, at a bit of an incline, I saw a fellow crouching down there and I knew him. Then they played an ace. He was a London Italian. I knew him well. I said, hello, Cain. He said, oh, well, I'm pleased to see you. He said, was there anybody else about you? I ain't seen a bloody soldier. I remember his words. He said, I haven't seen a soldier. I don't know where they got to. He said, the firing's going on all round about. So I don't know what's happening. So I said, well, we'll come back. Where we was lying, or crouched down, they suddenly started shooting with shrapnel shells. And they had a lot there too, in this little gully. And they were going, they were bursting something like about 20 feet above our head. And one hit a small sapling between the ears and exploded in there and sent all the shrapnel balls right on us, you see. And he got hit in the leg. Yes, he got hit there, I remember.
What, the knee?
Knee. And he called out, said, well, you hit Cain? So he said, yes, he said. I said, shall I have a look? So I said, yes. Because the chairs was